Welcome back, everyone, to the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. This is Kelly Gallup.
Good morning.
And this is show 18, I believe, which feels wild that we've been doing this for
I was trying
weeks.
To count those yesterday, thinking, how long have we been doing these things? It seems like that much time with you is a lot.
Well, we only shoot every 2 weeks, so it's not that bad.
That's the only saving grace. I was looking at that.
Last week's episode was fun. Just went out this morning, so hopefully people enjoyed it. You know, we've been talking a lot about big brown trout and the White River.
Oh, that's right. The white whale.
Yeah, the white whales. And then, you know, how those fish feed. Do they really feed that much?
You know, a guy brought up a comment in there. I wish I read some of the comments that first, I don't know, 100 or two, whatever it was. And the one guy said, you forgot to bring up what a prolific shrimp river that is. They have a sow bug. I've spoke at the sow bug roundup twice, I think. And it is. It's like super, super. They're everywhere. I mean, that's, if you go back in time, well, still, I think it's kind of come back there. It was hard. That's why nobody streamer fished. That's why, well, they didn't think it worked, but also the nymph fishing, I mean, in particular, you know, scuds.
Yeah.
And, it so dominated that place for decades, you know, maybe three plus, I would say decades. But, and I got thinking about it, you know, that's a possibility where he was talking about how they got so huge, but never having bonked one of those giant ones in the head and done a stomach autopsy, I still think it's hard. I think it'd be a great because you can sit and just filter feed those things if you're in the right spot.
Right.
But I've never really thought about the fact that maybe that is the kicker because the water's so perfect, it can be so slow, but you don't dislodge your shrimp then. And right. So, and the shrimp they don't float quite as much as people would think they do, you know, in the big water, they get dislodged. And I have seen, I remember an article way back when in the 70s about, it was for, I think, for the Latorte. It's an eastern river. And they were talking about fish eating these things and how they would drift. And somebody said, they don't really drift. And so anyway, I started reading more about it and watching them and stuff. And I've never actually seen drifting. And we've got millions of, that's another, when that dam shut down on us here, that's, I did. Johnny didn't believe they were shrimp in this thing. A lot of people didn't believe it. But I was guiding the editor of Fly Fisherman once, and he put on this, John Randolph, he's a great friend of mine, and he put on this god-awful 12 or 14 super flashback scud in green. And I'm like, kind of followed suit. We don't have those here, John. And he just put a clinic on with that stupid scud. And so they're really prolific here. But I'm curious whether I've never seen one. I can't imagine there's enough float going by that they could filter feed and get. I don't think that's how they get to be 30, 40. Well,
maybe we'll have to go down to the White and try to find a,
I have seen
30, 40 pound fish in Puppet's stomach.
The biggest, you'd need one big guy. You'd have to be a tube that long. Yeah. But I did see the biggest fish I've ever had on in there, which I didn't land it, so it doesn't worth talking about. But I did have it on for probably a minute and a half, 2 minutes, which is an eternity. And I'm on anchor and I'm not moving. I'm on this massive weed bed just above his place. It was just a little, saw Don Craner one day. He says to me, I saw you up there. What were you doing up there? And he says, he must have seen me with my fish on. And he says, what were you doing up there? I said, had a pretty good one in there. Don't mess with that, old girl. You ain't going to land her anyway. He goes, that's where I get my crayfish. And I said, it was freaking huge, Don. He goes, I've seen her. She's one, you know. I said, how big? And he says, oh, big pounds. You know, he made some, I don't remember what he said, 40 pounds or something. But I had that fish on, and it never swam more than a gentle walk pace. It circled my boat about four times. And just kept, and I swear to you, I've heard people say this before, but I've also known a lot of people who've fought rocks for 20 minutes, but this one's going around my boat, right? And it's just like, holy shit. And I don't want to just, I got nothing I can lose the fish on.
Yeah.
And I mean, that fish is the, by far the biggest thing I've ever had on. And I never really see it. I saw its shape because it's digging up mud as it goes around in that stuff. It's getting kind of turbid, right? And getting kind of, and it goes around the boat three times, four times, and I'm just, I don't know what to do, really. Because I really kind of wish I'd have broke anchor and just drifted down, maybe pull it out. But it never got off. But I did see Scott as it was going around it, because it was kind of just pushing against me. Mm. And I swear to you, when I said the rock thing, I really thought for a while I had snagged a beaver, because I have done that also. I have snagged beavers at night unintentionally.
Yeah.
And I had one just did this huge circle around me, and then it come up, but I was like, wow, what is this thing, right? And then I'll go, right? It's like, game over. But anyway, I thought for a minute, I said, well, maybe it's a beaver. And then I saw the shape of it, and I saw how big it was. And I did see a few scuds, but my point was is sometimes you'll see them. I've never seen them free forage so much, but I have seen them go into weed beds and shake the crap out of the weeds, mm-hmm. and then spin back around them. I used to see that on Spring Creek stuff. Where
just dislodging.
They would dislodge them themselves, but that's too much effort to think that they could gain weight. But anyway, it was just a thought maybe. But I wonder if it doesn't help them get to that point.
This is bad producing.
I'll get it.
All right. Dog, got to let the dog in.
No, we don't. Got to let her in and out.
Yeah, got to let her in and out. Yeah, hopefully she'll go down to the back and lay down. But I wanted to.
We don't need to show that.
Make sure it's not rubbing. So
let's go.
Let's go back. You guys are enjoying this part. Maybe not. We'll see.
See, I'm not sure to answer. He didn't ask a question. He just made a statement about it. But I doubt that there's enough. I have a hard time believing that there's that much. It's possible, but if they could sit and do that all day, you know, shrimp are pretty nutritious little things.
The biggest animals in the ocean, they're all filter feeders.
Yeah, but they're moving to their...
They are, But the, krill, in theory, the river right. could be moving it to them if they're in the right place and it's a prolific
food source. I could see it. I would think I would have seen enough. If it was that rich, I would think. But it might supplement, you know,
or you might see one 20-incher. Puke a bunch of them up in the boat or something.
Right.
One of the times, yeah.
I never have.
Maybe we need to go do some research down there. I've never fished white. I'd love to.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, well, for a lot of reasons. Okay, so I wanted to get into some questions that some of our viewers have asked over the course of the last few days. This one comes from Nathan Erskine, and then a bunch of random letters and numbers. So Nathan's question is, would like to know Kelly's opinion on the streamer called the Drunken Disorderly, the D&D. Does he only fish stuff that he's created and tied, or will he fish other flies too, such as the drunk? I've never heard a word about them from him, but I'm now realizing you sell them on your website. Does he ever fish them? Because I think they're pretty good. Now, before you get going on that, we have all these on our website. We've got tons more colors down at our other location.
And we got a bunch of new ones, and we got minis. The bunch little of new ones.
The minis are all, the minis are
sweet. Oh, my God. They are tied.
The
D&D, I've known Tommy since he was shitting in his diapers. Not really. I've known Tommy since, but I think since.
That's Tommy Lynch, by
Tommy
the way.
Lynch, inventor. It's a great. Yeah. I think it was probably when he was 13 or 14. I don't know. I think Russ introduced me. You yelling at my dog?
I'm yelling at your dog.
Ellie. Oh, sad dog. Oh, snorting dog.
I think we're going to put a picture up of Ellie every
come
time.
Come and show me every time you. Oh.
Every time she. There she is. That rat.
Get out of here.
While we're doing that, I'm going to move your mic.
I'm going to let her out.
We're good. I'm just going to do that.
Copy that.
This is good podcasting. Thanks for staying
good
with us.
Good podcasting.
Let the dog out. Yeah, so every time Ellie interrupts, we're going to throw a photo up there. And, yeah, this might just become a Ellie podcast.
I thought that squirrel keeper up that tree all day. But... So yeah, at any rate, with Tommy, I've known Tommy a long time. I'm not sure how, and really fishy cat. I mean, really, Tommy fishes the weight a lot, or at least he used to. But when it first came out, and I don't tend to fish other people's flies much, just because I tend to be, I'm always designing stuff, and I mean, I don't fish my own flies over and over that much either, because I just like to experiment constantly. But I do fish. If you looked in my box, in the dungeon boxes, I usually put them in there. There's always a bunch of D&Ds in there. And I particularly like that one yellow phase of it. When it first came out, it was, I mean, I think it was a joke, but when it first came out, Russ said, that's just a poorly tied zoo cougar, which is such bullshit. It's all kinds of stuff in here. And it was a joke. It was a joke. And I mean, everybody's always messing with somebody, but when it first came out, they were really hard to get. They were super expensive. And we had all of ours tied by Mike Schmidt, I think. We might have, they weren't commercial yet. And it's a really, some people said it looks like it's thrown together. It's not thrown together. It's by design. I mean, it is not a thrown together fly. It pissed me off when I saw somebody comment something about that. It's by design, and it wasn't a one and done. It had transitions. It's been a really well done fly, and I don't fish it as much. Probably Johnny fishes it a ton. You guys fish it.
Now, I fish it a lot.
With this new mini that came out with the D&D mini is going to be, it's going to rock. And it was a fly that I didn't want to take it off the. I didn't want to tie it. Because I did tie one day, and I had a sample. I think Tommy, when he and his wife were out, might have been on their honeymoon, and he gave me one. And I just went, man, I'm not sure I'm going to make this work the way it is, you know. And so, but the more they got commercial and they got them done well, Tommy's a stickler on this. Tommy's, you know, kind of like me. He's got rules, and our rules are if – George Daniels did a book, Strip Set. He interviewed several guys. And one thing that was wrong in the book is they transposed my leader formula with Tommy's. I think Tommy must have had a heart attack because, I mean, shit happens when you do books. They never per, and so Tommy has a long leader system, and I have a really short leader system, and so, but you know the kid's really fishy, and his flies are really fishy, and so, I tend to fish him early season more than the rest. I don't know why they just fall out, but no, I do fish, but it's really rare. I mean, people send me. Flies constantly. And by the way, if you send me stuff, somebody just sent me, and I put a thing, if you sent me three more right here, I never just like throw those flies away, by the way. I try to, shit, if I put everyone up there, we'd have to have a wall. I mean, we'd have to have the whole thing corkboarded to put them up. But I keep them and sometimes try to steal a piece or two out of something, way people then do one set or another. But as far as the D&D goes, I probably fish that less than I should, but Johnny, I don't know. I don't think I've ever been with Johnny in a day where he doesn't fish it.
Yeah, he fishes it a lot.
He fishes it every day, and
I'd say it's a mainstay amongst our guides and shop guides.
And again, to me, it's not a ego thing or something like that. It's simply that I have my stuff in transition constantly.
Yeah.
So if I'm not fishing, and I know what mine do, and so if I'm not fishing those. I'm usually doing a prototype, but I said Tommy's flies are in my roundup. We did a show somewhere. I don't remember. We had it in there. I don't know if we got a fish. I think we're on the big hole or I don't remember where we were. And we had them. And I fished them in Chile too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that bug. To me, I put it in the same kind of class as like a zoo cougar or flathead kitty, mm-hmm. where it's a very visual bug.
I mean, yeah, things.
It is generally going to be in the top of the column unless you fish it really slow and bring it down.
And if you look at Tommy running a 9-foot leader on his or more, I don't remember. I just remember it was when I was reading the book after George sent it to him. Like, I said, well, I think I called George and said, well, I don't really care, but Tommy's going to shit himself when he sees his leader's 2-foot, 3-foot long.
So I remember a day, this is kind of, we'll come back to the D&D, but I remember a day going out with Matt and Jeremy. And I think it was the first day we fished with Jeremy. It was in the spring of my first year. And there's this thing on the Madison when the water becomes green pre-runoff, when it's like starting to rise. For whatever reason, they just love yellow. That year, we fished yellow for like 3 weeks straight. We'd try other flies. They were just on yellow.
And that, well, like, there's a specific movement to it too. Nothing, that head shape is so unique, you know, with that kind of semi-diver head, but it's kind of flat. And it's a fishy bug. On the Yellowstone, you don't fish the Yellowstone without it.
You cannot fish
the Yellowstone without a D&D.
So that day with Jeremy, we're out. I lose my last yellow bug. I just hadn't fished yellow much before being out here. And I had the D&D, and I had the olive gold one, which really kind of fishes yellow to me. It feels yellow. And it just got lit up. I mean, I was smoking them on it. And then it got pretty beat up, right? It lost a couple of its mallard flanks. The head was a little sideways at that point. And so I'd throw it out my first strip. A lot of time it would slide across the top of the water. And then, you know, I started kind of waiting to let the sinking line bring it down to get it underwater. And Jeremy's like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Well, I want it underwater. He goes, it doesn't matter.
Why? They just ate the shit out of it. You don't have anything left of it. It was on the top.
Yeah. And it was skating across the top, and they were, you know, it was almost like a suicide bite.
If you haven't fished one, it's got anything that has a flank in it. Now people call it zuku or whatever. They're not on top. The back one's on top. These are side. Everything about the design of this thing makes it almost impossible for it to go in one direction or another. It gets really chaotic. So there's just really nothing. When you look at this thing, this is a particularly nice gun, but it's gonna barely skim, and it's erratic as hell. You just never know what it's gonna do. And if, you know, I had more trouble with this fly trying to do short movements with it than I did just like, this is a good rope puller fly. This is a good, just given big pulls or big swings, however you want to do it. And do not try to tame the fly. Let it be wild. Let it do its thing. It will go, you'll see. And the eights, they'll wreck you. Because it truly, this is a complete reactionary bait. This fly, when they come at this thing, they air launch a lot. You'll see.
I was going to say, you'll see a lot of back.
just blow
it's
it up.
So fun.
Which is worth it. And there's no, like I said, this new mini that's come. They're all at the other shop. We have them online. And man, they're tied so well now. That was the hardest part in the old days. That's why I didn't want to mess with it, because I just took the ones Tommy gave me. But they were a little comp. They're not so bad now that you've got it. It's been figured out or whatever. They've got it down. So
do you know,
give them a whirl, especially that mini. I mean, it's going to do the same thing. I'll bet you that mini does the same thing. That when we had the Dungeon, nothing's ever outsold the Dungeon. And when that first mini came out, it wrecked it. I mean, that just sold like three times what a normal one did. I guarantee you. And the first thing, I was in the shop 2 days ago, and I walked over, I'm like, ah, yeah. I hadn't seen him yet. I'm like, is there anything I can do not to just steal hands full of
them? No, we should go out and shoot a show where we make an effort to fish those ones. But, you know, for Kelly, like, he's got so many bugs. I think the other thing, too, is there's a lot of bugs that catch fish.
Yeah.
This is one of them. This is a proven bug.
And the other thing about when I was talking about it, the other thing about this was that I never really mastered how it's a unique swim to this fly. And I kept trying to make it do things. And I really couldn't. I think I got a little too fixated on making it do, like, I can make my flies kick every, I know when I can make them do things. This son of a bitch looked like I had a motor in it. It was doing other shit without me doing it. And if I didn't really get one right away with it, I kind of felt like I was doing something wrong. And I just, and in particular, for all of you geniuses that know you're the best in the world, when you're filming, things change. And you have X amount of time. And so you have to make things happen. And so when you're experimenting, it's a bad time. It's just time seems to go in a warp speed when you're filming. And so, you know, for me to run this on film, I just needed to fish it more. Yep. And fish it more and fish, because there's no doubt if you get one of the eats, it's worth it for film. I mean, if you're doing TV stuff, it's one eat on one of these things when they air launch that sucker, and they tend to flip, like you said. They tend to be just so like, holy shit, wide open. It would be worth it, but it's this year I'll fish it more. Just so I only have a few experimental bugs coming out this year, so.
I think you hit on something, and I think the best way to fish this bug is almost with blind ignorance. Like when you're someone who's as experienced as you are and you know you can make a fly do things, this bug can be frustrating a little bit. But I think that, you know, there's an element of randomness, but I think it's almost organized chaos with it, right? Where it's, yeah, it's designed to move like this because it works. I mean,
it's what we're trying to do to the other flies.
Yes.
It's just we structured them so they didn't. You know, his orientation of his head is, that's why it does the crazy shit it does. Yeah. And of course, I thought about duplicating it, which I didn't, because there's just some things that you can't, you can, as a designer, something, Russ Madden's original circus peanut, when I did the peanut envy, mm-hmm, was that it was so good, it didn't need fixing. And it was so good, right? And I had peanut envy because it was the greatest. If there were many times where I've said it in boat guiding in particular, that I could have four colors of peanut and be as happy as a pig and shit. I mean, if they aren't going to eat that fly, because I could make it do, I could make it fast, you know, and I could stall it or I could fish it, swimmy. I could do anything I wanted with it. And so, but this fly, it's kind of like when I left one of the companies and all that original style of head of like the bang tails and the TNAs, that was an original design. That was my invention, right? That was not anybody else's. They didn't have heads. They didn't have eyes on flies like that back then. And definitely people say, well, what about saltwater? Shit, no, they have nothing. They still don't. I mean, they don't have to. And so when that fly came out, and when I left one of the companies to go to another one, suddenly there's this new fly, right? It's exactly the same fly. It's the same shit. You just made yourself a real piece of shit when you knock it off and call it yourself. Mm-hmm. So to take Tommy's fly, I mean, anybody that tries to come up and say, well, this was my idea to it, no. No, dude, you just put another piece of flash in the sun, bitch. Yep. It doesn't need my help. And it doesn't, which bugs me because then I don't want to fish. I don't, yeah. I do like to fish my own flies just because it's such a fun process. I mean, if you could see my gut pile of worthless shit that never worked, it's my favorite thing.
Yeah, you gave a bunch to me.
Man, I gave you a whole box of them. And that's just 100 out of 1,000, right? But to try to go in and fix it, it's stupid. It's just like, let it go. It's Tommy's. It's great. It's like a game changer. It's a game changer. I don't care what you do to it. Still Blaine's.
Yeah, right.
Whatever. It's yeah. Still that, right? Muddler's a muddler. So that was part of it. But this year, like I said, I don't have many new bugs. I got some stuff coming, but it's that I want to work on, but it won't be. And it's really hard when you're filming to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't play with that stuff.
Right.
And then I got to learn to fish that. Maybe I'll have Tommy come out and have him guide me. He can be a pain in the ass, though. He's got rules, man. I hate when people tell me what to do. But or we can go back and
especially
fish. Maybe we'll go back and see if we go up and fish the PM with him with it.
That'd be cool.
Because he rocks some big fish with it. And it is, that was quite a commercial for a fly I hardly ever fish.
Yeah, it was. I fish a lot.
Well, I do fish. But, you know, I was thinking about it. It's hard to believe that I can think while I'm actually talking endlessly. When you said about trying not to harness it or reel it in, I think every fish I've caught on it, I thought it was a mistake. You know, it's like,
which in and of itself is how it's supposed to work.
Well, that's right? The thing. I'm like, well, I don't know if that's right, you know, because I like to work the rod. And I remember the first one I got, I think it was, it might have been with Johnny, I don't know. It was a little yellow one. And I was pulling rope, which I never do, you know. And I think I was just trying to catch up because I think I tried to do something with it and I got the fly doing this. And I gave it a pull to catch up and blows up. And like, I wasn't even trying. And I discount. If I get a fish and I'm not, like, not looking or something, if the flies weren't such a pain, I'd break them off. If I didn't want to leave it in the fish, I just hate that when you're not. You're looking at whatever it is, with your head up your ass, that whatever it is that you. Yeah, the fish caught you, and it's like you should have to take a deduction of three fish because you're. Yeah. But at any rate, I think the first two or three fish I caught, I had the same fish. And the one, I mean, I knew I was moving the fly, but then it was coming up. You know how they come up and do that weird thing and like that? And I was like, looking at it kind of like, whoa, that was kind of, happens again, right?
Yeah.
But I'm kind of mesmerized by the damn thing. It's not, I know that I had the first, I implemented the first movement to it, and then it started this funky thing coming up, and I kind of staring at it. At least I was looking at the fly, but I was staring at it going, well, that's pretty high, and it gets eaten. I was like, shit,
I mean,
that's two.
In theory, it kind of mimics a dying fish, right, in that it chugs down when you strip it, and then it floats up really erratically. And sometimes, you know, it'll chug up and flip out of the water.
That's when it chugged up. That's what it did when it was. I pulled it down, and again, Tommy designed. He designed it to do something. I'm certain. Mm-hmm. Whether it was the whole intent, whether it was how it happens, or all of it was there, I don't know, but. I didn't live there then, but Tommy's from, he's from Michigan, Pyrmerkit. That's how I've known Tommy for so long. And really good guide. And so, but anyway, when it would go up like that, when it chugged down and it went up, that's the one that, it was cool looking, right?
Yeah.
That's why I was staring at the damn thing. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know if that was by design or if it, And frankly, it had so much movement in the first days, I kept thinking it got hitched.
Yeah.
You know, I'd pull the fly in.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure it was Johnny that was with me, because he's the one that made me start fishing him more, because he was doing so. And I pulled the fly in, and I think it was Johnny. It could have been Dougie Pauline. He's like, what the hell are you doing? I thought it had wrapped.
Yeah, I thought it had wrapped up on itself. The movement was like, that erratic.
So I do fish him, but I'll never try to fix one.
Here's a pro tip from an amateur. This is a bug I like to run on a swivel because it can spin.
Oh, man.
It can spin your line way up. So
yeah.
I don't normally run swivels. I normally do until I am too lazy to change my butt section and then eventually break it because it's so old.
Tandems, I run them more now. I think it was Richie Strollis and I were talking about that. Rather, I ran them because I think Richie started doing it. And I did a long time ago. Mostly for the tippet. Mm-hmm. And I quit doing it because I never changed the back
section.
Changed the butt section. It made me. But in particular, this one, a lot of the divers, like even like the bangtails and stuff like that.
Yeah, a zoo cougar often.
I hardly ever do a single fly or a single hook fly, but I started last year doing it more. It's a lot easier. And somebody, we were asked this question on a podcast or something, Q&A, when we used to do the Q&As. It might have been then, and I had no adversity, but one of the things I'm working on right now is these floating flies for a completely different style of fishing, and it's Carolina rigging, which we did a show on Carolina rigging once.
Yep.
Where you just, the swivel, you put weight above the swivel, fly line, swivel, your tungsten beads in here, and the flies back there. And we did it with traditional flies. And I do it in the spring with unweighted crayfish. I do that and drag those across the bed and let them float. But I have a whole series I'm working on trying to, figure out how I want stuff to do. I had an idea for one that I wanted the minnow to go head first away from the fly. I just couldn't, there's no way.
It's like it's running away.
Yeah. So, but you'd pull it backwards and it would run back. So it would float and go back up. Really hard to do in moving water. But it was fun. It's just like, it's a thought process. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty much, after we did that, I had swivels on quite a bit, and I'm going to start, especially with the bigger flies, and they do tend to spin your lines up. And if you're having problems with fly, with your fly line, or if, like if it's coming in and it's coiling on you, just you know you need one.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, we've been using them for a reason. Everything.
Slidein.com.
Yes. Oh, we have swivels?
Yeah, we've got swivels.
Yes.
I run them. I like them on the spay rigs, especially throwing bigger flies.
Well, especially on a static swing.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you go back in time in the 80s and 90s, when guys would swing a lot of the prawn-style flies, in particular when guys would tie them and they would glue the back or some guys would put a caulk on the back, and geez, those things would just spin, and they didn't mind that spin, but they would just roll because you're on that. You know, when you're working a fly, it doesn't get the same chance as when you put an arc into it and let it go like this. It can spin back there. And a lot of prawn flies, whether they were done that way or not, at least the ones that I fished, I could see them doing this, the roll, you know.
Well, I wonder, I'd love to have somebody who knows hydrodynamics and physics better than us.
Better than me?
Better than myself.
Einstein's dead, dude.
Better than myself. But I wonder if the chug and then stall, you know, it's a lot of different water pressure on the head. If it doesn't develop, you know, the constant pressure of swinging across might lead to a more swing-like motion.
Just thought of something as you were saying, that chug and stall.
Yeah.
For those of you who think that any of us did this, Larry Dahlberg invented all this.
Yeah.
Larry Dahlberg was the greatest. It pisses me off that he quit, but he was just smarter. But he didn't quit. He just went into doing the other stuff, but gear stuff. But Derek, the Dahlberg diver, if you ever...
Do you have one up there? I can throw a picture in of one.
I had a buddy that tied me, Wayne tied me one that I think I might have taken it home.
What about?
Because it was so perfect.
That, the green one down there? Is that a Dahlberg diver?
No, where?
The froggy looking one?
No, but it's kind of like
it's
it. But
it's a similar
the Dahlberg
profile,
diver,
right?
Well, it's like this, but the Dahlberg diver, I think I took it home because it's a buddy of mine, and I didn't want it to get cobbed off the wall. And but at any rate, we'll show it. It had a tapered front end, then it went up, and it was designed to chug. It couldn't go one direction. And so this has been around for a long time. To my way of thinking, it's been a real uphill battle since Larry's Dahlberg. Because in some way, shape, or form, it's synthetic heads changed it and the styles changed it, but anything with deer hair and anything that made it, if you're going to put a statue up, it should be of Larry Dahlberg, not of one of us, because he was, when you talk about, he did that in the 70s, I think. If it wasn't the 70s, it was the early 80s. And that, it should have changed the world, but we just weren't ready for it. It became completely, for the most part, somebody's going to be out there yelling, no, I did it too. Bullshit. It was a bass fly. Because Larry's he's a warm water cat, right? And so, and it was designed to do something. Had we taken that and that design and like we've done them, I've done them, we're only one side's that way. Right?
Yeah.
So I could get it to do this. Dude, it was predecessor to the Zoo Cougar. The Zoo Cougar came up off of Larry Dahlberg's, not completely, but the head stuff, and then trying to make flies do weird stuff, right? And so, but if anyone that doesn't know anything about Larry, look him up. I've talked about Ray Schmidt before. Ray was his rep or something back in the day. And he made the comment, and I didn't really notice it. I'd only seen him cast it. I think I saw him at a sports show once. He said he was and Ray is you don't get better than Ray at casting. I mean, he's a great spay guy, too, way back in time. I mean, he was way ahead of the curve. And he said Larry's the purest, and he was also the first and longest-running employee of Sage Rods. When Sage started, it was called Winslow. I think he was before Sage. And he was a rep, I mean, a manufacturer's rep for the rye company forever. And so he knows his cast, and, you know, reps are generally really well-trained in casting. But he made a comment that Larry was the single most pure caster in the history of the world. And then I saw Larry cast. If you, like I said, if you've never heard of the guy, look him up, because there's this video that he does way back when he's standing in a boat and probably with a fiberglass rod. And when you watch that cast and you say, oh, I'm that good, you are an egomaniac, because you probably aren't. If you look at that and you don't see absolute, like, oh my God, is this guy great? Chris Willem works for him now. Chris was a fly guy for a long time, but he went to the dark side too. It's okay. I admire.
Yeah, it's still fun.
Huh? Oh, I want to go back and do a show with those guys so bad.
It'd be great.
Larry.
I wonder, obviously.
Sidebar.
We get more folks watching our fishing shows in the podcast, but I'm curious what our podcast listeners would think about us doing a conventional tackle show one of these times.
If we go back and fish with Larry, I guarantee you that fly stuff's going to be marginal.
You can just go, I mean, go fish for smallies, whatever.
No, we're going to go muskie fishing. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
No, you're kidding. And, I mean,
That'll put some pressure on getting one.
I mean, muskies are muskies.
They are.
But there's nobody knows more. I don't know. That's a kind of bold statement, but I would put in the warm water world, if anybody knows more about fish than Larry Dahlberg, I want to meet him. And they're probably, you know, he's just one of those guys that didn't really give a shit about anything except success, and not in a monetary, his success was figuring out, I tried to get, because Chris Willem, who used to fish on the White with Chris, he's a great guy, but I says, if you can get access, because he was a diary keeper all his life, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember watching something where he said he was doing diaries on smallmouth movement way before anybody knew anything about that kind of stuff. And he was a kid, I think. And I said to Willem, I says, you know, if you could somehow just get those, and they just ended up at my house. There could be a monetary reward. I mean, just some of them, yeah. Anything. I mean, but that goes back to this. That goes back to nothing to do with Tommy's fly. But it's important. There's too much shit out there nowadays. Where did you see that dumbass chick that stole the wombat baby? I told you about it. Yeah. Oh, my God. She's from Montana. I hope they kick her out. What a dumbass.
Firing squad.
I don't think of that part.
That might be too quick. Huh? Cute.
But the point was, there's just so much this influencer shit of these people, and everybody takes credit for stuff. It's, man, we got history that people are forgetting about, and it really bugs me.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter who did it first. It matters who says it the loudest.
Yeah. Yeah. Or gets the most views on it.
Right.
Yep. Nowadays. But, and that's one thing, no matter what, with the D&D, that's an OG. I don't give a shit.
Don't mess with it.
There's a lot of flies that can come say, well, that's pretty close to this. No, this was a random act of terror.
I think I've talked to a lot of people in the shop and just around on rivers over the years, and you know, the conversation of favorite streamers comes up. I would say a lot of people mention one of your flies, whether it be a Dungeon, a Kitty, an Envy, a Cougar, whatever it is. This is the other fly I hear a lot at D&D, and I think it's because of how fun it is to fish.
Yeah, I would put it, especially the last 8 years or so. He didn't really promote it that hard. I mean, he did locally, but not, he didn't. And there's a lot of hot shoe. I mean, you look at Michigan, the heart of that streamer world, where this all started in Michigan, right? And don't tell me it started on Rangeley Lake here. I realize it, you know. There's a reason that we talk a lot about the gray ghost and other, you know, flies. But when you start talking about modern streamer design and where it started, it happened in Michigan, it happened with the book, and you got, there was just so many cats around there. If it, you know, and especially this, the perimeter, and Madden and Lufkus and me and Bob and Jack Ford and guys that were pushing that limit with flies. And then a lot of them came off the Pure Marquette. And the Pure Marquette flies were, you know, Walt Grau. There's a lot of people doing stuff. And Tommy is one of those. And he was a kid. He was 15, 14 years old when we started that stuff. And so it's a unique fly. Give it its credit. It's these things need to... There was a period in time. That's why in the second book I put that thing and I showed... someone sent it to me, and I, damn it, I wish whoever sent it to me, tell me who it was. And he sent me, and it was a and I put it in Modern Streamers too. And it's a full page. Don't let me forget to put that in there. We're going to make a still of it and show it in this thing. And it's 1954, I think, advanced streamers, herders, double and triple articulated streamers.
Been around for a bit, huh?
Yeah. But I got credit for it forever, you know. It's like, and then Russ, too. I mean, for the circus peanut, and it was like, I think Russ's was the first. I think peanut might have been the first articulated nationally produced one. I don't know if the TNA was before that or not, but it was like, hey,
keep going. I'm just gonna mess with your mic.
I like when men touch my clothes. If you know what I mean. Just saying.
Sorry.
But there was, it's just like, we didn't invent that. It's been, and who knows where it started. A lot of those flies, I used to have a stationary tail that was like on the Rangeley Lake trolling flies. They just had a short hook and it wasn't articulated so much. Just back there was like a flash, like a dodger or something. But in that book, it's exactly how we did it.
Yeah.
I mean, it mono, which I don't even know if it's mono. I never really checked. I just see, but you see, and a triple. So I can assure you there's a dead space in time, unless it's just a black hole on the Ranger Lake area in Maine, where they were only that and the rest of the world didn't get it. But these are triple articulated streamers and designed for trolling, I understand. But how it didn't move anywhere out of that northeast corner, for anything for that matter, just right. Blows my mind.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm sure people were trolling them, because my dad had some in his that were trolling flies. And I remember seeing them, but they were, you trolled them behind a boat. We didn't behind a canoe. And, you know, you just did. But I don't know how it didn't go past that. Then suddenly Bob and I write the book, the first one. And suddenly, you know, and if you look in that, the original book, there are no articulated flies.
Right.
It all took off right after that. And because we realized they were hitting the heads of them. But it's amazing that, but we didn't invent it. We just made it better.
Let the dog out. Here's another LE commercial break.
Oh, letting both out?
Oh.
Dudley will be back in no time.
Dudley.
Just leave the door open. No, don't. Freeze our ass out.
Yeah, it's cold. Come here, Duds. Well, I'll let him back in when he wants to. Well, Nathan, thanks for the question. Got a lot of mileage out of that. Ooh. Once again, slidein.com for all of your flies, your drunken disorderlies, your swivels, anything else you could need. Also, the dudes down at the North Slide do a great job. If you ever have questions about any of the stuff, how it needs to be fished, give them a call.
Or materials and stuff like that.
Yeah,
because every to tie these bugs. All the guys that are packing, shipping, working are all super fishy, tie guys too. So
it really is a super fishy crew. As soon as I got out of the shop, the average level of fishiness went way up.
Yeah,
having Jake and Kahana and Chuck and Chris, Matt, Johnny brings it back down a little bit.
Johnny had a baby.
Oh, yeah.
Lila.
Daddy John.
Yep.
Cute. I mean, he was pretty strong before. Imagine dad's strength, John.
Yes, it's going to be.
He's rowing up river now.
For those of you who didn't know, we'll show a picture of her. She's adorable.
Yes, very.
I saw a picture of Rosie. Babies can be ugly, you know, when you first see them. You never want to tell. I don't remember which one of my kids. It was like, whoa, man, is that thing ugly. And and so, but I saw this picture, and it looks like the baby looks like it's this big, and its head's all weird and ugly, and Rosie's got it. And Rosie's this tiny little thing, right? Then you see a picture of Johnny, and it could have been minutes. You know, they change colors, so like come and go. Right? And you see Johnny. Yeah,
with Rosie. That one, and then that one?
Yeah, the baby looked like it was this long in Rosie's arm. Then Johnny, it looks like he's holding this. He looks like this. You know, he's got his freaking D&D. He's a monster. And it was like, and then she got really cute right afterwards.
I was hanging out with
that first day, though, boy, it's, if you've never had kids, everybody says, oh, it's the most precious thing. I was like, yeah. It's probably Madison. take hell for that. But,
hopefully she doesn't listen. I'm sure somebody will tell her.
Well, her husband might.
Yeah.
He's a fish dude. He's one of you spay guys, too.
Oh, bad dude, probably. All right, well, let's jump to another question. This one's from Scott Beal. Yeah, it's kind of a random.
ugly babies.
Yeah, maybe we should do an episode on... Never mind. Scott Beal asked, question for Dr. Gallup. Spelled your name wrong, but gave you the doctor, so I think that kind of is a wash there. For those of us who may have 20 or fewer days on the Madison River and travel across the U.S. to get there, what mindset would you recommend we bring so that we can enjoy the experience, respect river protocol, and not piss anyone off? I understand that spending my money on fishing in Montana helps, but for some of us, the best reward is a guide who says his casting was sloppy and he didn't need all that high-end gear, but I'd guide him again any day. We had fun. That's a nice compliment to get. So I think to break this down, we talked a little bit about mindset in one of our episodes, but what would you say to someone like him who may be traveling from the other side of the country to come fish here?
I'm assuming that they're talking about coming in July, right?
Probably.
So yeah. That means get ready to have friends, lots of them.
Yeah.
And the mindset to fish this river in particular is that... You might let that dog in.
Yeah, we're going to let the dog in.
Told you he's going
to. One more dog break.
Now he's on the other end.
I'll get him.
He may or may not.
Come here, dog. Come on. Got to get a picture of the dog. I think he's got snow all over his face. Hey, you, come here.
Dudley. I got better ones.
Oh, did I get it?
Your knee.
Kind of got it.
I got better ones. Do a retake.
All right. We're back.
Retake. Take one.
Okay, so Scott's question.
No, that's right.
You got it. Great. All right, we'll go into it.
So I'm assuming he means he's coming in July, which means you need to be prepared to have lots of friends around you because the whole world comes here in July. The beauty of it is the river can take it. And it just, there's so much, you hit so little of our river from shore, and I assume we're talking about wade fishing, and that the fish can cycle in and out, and they're so hip to you, but the fish count is so great. And so if your mindset is just to take a small section, and remember how many fish are on this river. It is so dense with fish, and really quality fish. And so you fish, I tell everybody to imagine the river's 10 feet wide and the rest is scenic value, and fish slow and just don't worry if somebody's around. I mean, that's the first one. You just got to get used to that. Or go into the places where it's harder, like where the water's roaring fast, because there's just as many fish there. It's just scary to be around it. And so... For that part of it, I mean, that's the hardest one, is to think that you're going to come to Montana and be alone is really a 1960s mindset. It's like, and even then it wasn't. I mean, there's plenty. I've got a 1959 or 60 5960, I forget, it's an outdoor life, about the earthquake. And there's pictures, people downstream, and there's still people out there. I mean, right. There was always people. Yep. And so get used to that. But then, I mean, like I would tell anybody, capitalize on your time by doing prep work, call the shop, find out what bugs are hatching, find out, you know, what you need so that you're ready to go, and go early, fish late, just put your time in, and it'll be fine. But everybody gets here and they say, oh, there was 20 cars. There were 14 cars last Saturday at Reynolds Bridge. Now, it was a nice day. It was 50 degrees out and sunny. There was 14 cars there. Yep. That was in March or February. I don't remember when it was. Might have been 2 weeks ago. And it was weekend. The weekdays, you're not going to see it. And that really doesn't, and by the way, coming on a weekday or weekend in the summer doesn't mean shit.
Doesn't matter. People are here on vacation.
They're here from get to go. And so get ready for that. What was some more of the questions? That was one I fixated
on. So, you know, not wanting to piss people off, what kind of mindset would you bring? River protocol. Yeah.
Well, we kind of touched on that a couple podcasts ago about you know, the state says use the rule of visual impact, such a crock of shit, you wouldn't be able to fish this river ever. I mean, the theory of that was if you see somebody, you're too close. Well, good luck with that nowadays. And so, but I mean, just be polite. Don't low hole people. Don't high hole them. If a person's going up, you don't have the right to go above them. Just come in behind. Yeah. And trust me, it won't matter. The fish, they left fish. I don't care if it's Johnny or Braden or whoever, they leave fish. The fish move out. They slide. Some eat, some don't, and then they'll come right back in. 2 minutes later, it's a whole different fishery. So, like I said, if you don't want to be around people, there are better rivers to not be around people. There's no better river, but there's rivers very close, and you can just walk and get away.
Yeah. Even here, there's places where you can walk and get.
Yeah, you go up into the canyon. Walk up into the whitewater.
Even
it's
down at
frightening.
$3.
Yeah,
just take a $3 walk for 15 minutes. You're mm-hmm. gonna go find your own water.
Most people want to stay within eyesight of the bridge or the landmark, which you can see forever. So it doesn't really.
Right.
Just have that mindset that, you know, and you know, it doesn't matter where you fish. There's assholes everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, just don't let them ruin your day or drown them.
I think trying to read someone's,
don't drown them.
Body language and what they're giving you is a good tip too, right? If somebody wants to come chat and you want to chat, then chat. If you say, hey, do you mind if I jump in, blah, 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 and they're like, you know, really focused, leave them alone. I mean, just, it's basic human nature.
Everybody wants the same thing for the most part. They just want to have their space and they didn't come to talk.
Some people
Rich Strolis had a great thing in his, what's the name of his Chasing Shadows? I don't know if that's a book, but I don't know if that's what it's called for his, I have to look it up. Look up Rich Strolis. And he has this, he puts out a monthly newsletter. And he said, you know, if you see the big bald guy, he doesn't want to talk to you. If I'm fishing, I don't, and he laid it out and kind of, I'm sure some people thought he sounded like an ass, but he just said the truth.
Yeah.
You know, people don't really go to rivers to have you so, hey, you might want to do that, but they don't. And he says, right. If you see the big bald guy, he doesn't want to talk to you. If he's walking out and going home, he probably won't mind.
Yes.
Yeah. But read it. It was 2 issues ago, I think. And it was just hilarious, yeah. Right? Because he said exactly what everybody's thinking. Just, you know, and I don't mind when people ask me because I've dedicated my life to doing this stuff. And you can't have it both ways.
Right.
All this shit about people when they get famous at something and they want their privacy. Well, you didn't want it when you were starting, right? And you don't do this kind of stuff so you can be an ass whenever. I mean, I get stopped in airports constantly. Sorry about bugging you. I said, you're not bugging me. I'm the one that put that shit out there. So, you know, idea with this was that you'd say, but when you're on the river, not necessarily, I don't mind. You can talk to me all day. And
but you know who that stresses
out? Guess who's going to start talking? Me.
And you know who that stresses out is? Me. Yes. I love it when we're on the way back from filming. Yeah. When we're on the way back from filming, awesome. When we're trying to go shoot something and the light's fading, then tougher for me.
I don't mind. I like watching him stress. Yeah, but I mean, that's just a common sense thing. Like I said, look up Rich's deal, and he kind of pins it. And he's from an area where, you know, their life out in the East Coast is like here always. Right. There's always tons of people, you know, and too many rats in the cage. But there's a, I don't know, that's a never-ending battle. Just going with low expectations, and you'll enjoy it. And try taking a look around while you're sitting out there. It's a pretty spectacular spot to sit and just
catch a fish, sit down on the bank, look at the mountains. It's gorgeous.
Well, I don't waste my time like that. My deal is I'm catching another fish. But, you know, you might do it that way.
I do sometimes. I do.
Can we get his question?
I get pretty serious about the fishing.
You never do.
Yeah. So another question that I just kind of thought of is, how do you approach boat versus wade etiquette? And I think we
belabored that. I mean, we've just crushed wade angling. We have just absolutely said enough about that, I think. And our last two things, it's simple. I just reiterated a second ago. Don't high hole and don't low hole.
I mean, a boat versus a wade angler. Like if you're a wade angler, boat's coming at you.
So I see what you're saying.
And then if you're the one in the boat,
I understand
and you see wade.
I thought you meant comparing the two. But but it's no different. And the world is never different. I don't care if you're in a lake. If somebody's catching fish, you keep your ass away from them. You don't go to fish. People think, and I've had it happen so many times on this river where you see you're catching fish and the guys come right to you. Like the migrations at your feet, you know, they're everywhere. You left them all sitting there, dumbass. So, but from approaching from a boat to a wade angler, I've always personally had rules, and particularly in Michigan where I adopted my rules because the rivers are smaller. They don't have nearly the fish count that they do out here. They're generally slower. You have more room to screw somebody's fish up. And a lot of times we were fishing dry, especially in the old days. We were pretty much all dry until really the mid-90s. And so, anyway, if I see someone, it's no different. Because if they're walking downstream, I'm in a boat, so I have to pass them, right? I can't sit back. But we had a rule, my guides, me, that if I saw somebody setting up on a fish, and it's obvious, we backed off and we asked if there was, and the rivers are too small to go. If you're on the Yellowstone, who gives a shit? Go out in the middle. You're not going to put anybody's fish down. They're fishing, give them 40 foot of rise form, you know, around them, and that's it. You're not going to ruin their fishing. But it's pretty simple to just be courteous, you know, and say, okay, but we would back off, and I told all the guys that, you know, you'd never go around them. Ask them if you can go behind them. Yep. Because you're fishing too. Kayakers used to do that to me all the time. I'm particular on the Boardman. I had a chit-chat with the owner of the kayak company club.
Friendly, I presume.
You know, the first one, they would come downstream and I'd be fishing the evening. And I'd be fishing maybe 20 feet from me. And he says, hey, don't worry, we'll go way around you. And they go right over my fish. 10 of them, right? And sometimes the visual's worth it, most times not. And so away they'd go. And finally, I would just, you know, and they don't know any better. They're just.
Right.
And so I went to the club and we had a meeting. And I said, this is how it is. We're not ice fishing. We're not right in front of us. We're throwing out there. So if you see my back, you know I'm throwing that way. So if I'm pointing wherever my face is, I need you not to go on that side of it.
Right.
Man, there were people they were really, I mean, really upset at themselves. And I mean, I'm not shitting you. After that, every day, every time I'd go, they'd be going backwards, you know, they're coming back. Can we go behind? Yes. They were so nice, I felt bad for saying it. But we did the same thing. We just said, back off if you can, and then in a boat, if you're going down there, if you're rowing a boat, you spent, my guess is, before you jumped your happy ass into that boat, you spent $15,000 to get in it. And you have fished enough to know that you want a boat. Which tells me that when you, if you need to be told that you shouldn't row off in front of somebody, you might have an issue. You might be an asshole. Because if you've spent that much time on the water that you own a boat, and you don't get that you shouldn't run close to another angler, I mean, I just don't really get how somebody that's past 16 years old is done being a dumbass, that you need to be told that. But I guess they do.
I'll play devil's advocate here.
You're one of them,
yep,
too.
Yep, I was. I bought my first boat when I was maybe 20, 21, and I bought it because I was fishing the Yakima River in Washington, which is Great Wade River. It's an ag river, right? So mm-hmm. It runs really hot during the summer when they're pumping water to the fields. The rest of the season, it's a great like fall, winter, spring fishery. When that water's up, it's an impossible wading river. It's pointless mm-hmm. to even try. So I bought a raft, and I had started fishing a lot, but I'd never had my own boat, and I had no clue about river etiquette. I blocked boat ramps. I anchored up in holes.
Oh, that's a good one to talk about.
Yeah, I committed every mistake in the book.
Unless, have you ever seen that meme about me being Jesus in the boat and standing in front of the thing, and it says, Kelly Gallup, you're blocking the boat launch.
No.
I'm giving a sermon.
Oh, really?
No, it's hilarious.
I'd love to see
I
that.
I love these people that come up with this stuff.
Was it Rustle Bucket?
I don't know.
I don't know if he listens. Shout out him. He's a great Instagram account. He's making memes of Kelly all the time. I got the sticker somewhere, the Streamer Jesus one.
Yeah. It's hilarious because I'm like standing in the front of the boat doing this in a Jesus robe. Well, that makes sense more. From a boat perspective, it's still, if you're an angler, if you see a guy, someone on the river, now, there's a point where you just have to do as much as you can to be polite. Like, you know, they're in the middle of the river, maybe they're taking up space and they want the whole river and they don't want any boats to go by. Well, that's on you too. If you're a wade angler, tough shit. I mean, we all do that. You got to put up with each other. So the boats go behind you, that preferably. But I always try to, if it's a river, like this one's too fast and you're not going to get, there's no reason for a boat to ever crowd somebody wade fishing, ever, ever, period. If you do that on this river, you are an asshole. Mm-hmm. Period, end of discussion. There's no, somebody wades their happy ass out in the middle of this thing, give them some group, because they're probably going to drown on the way home. it's their last day fishing. Cool. They've earned it to be out there, but you'll never see that.
No.
You will never see that. And so you back off, give them a little, just what would you ask, you know, if that was you, what would you do? You'd say, man, what a dick. Why'd you have to come that close?
Yep.
Right? You don't have to. If you have to, you have to. But then you do it with excuse. She's coming in and you're like, dude, I got nothing here. I got to go. You know, where do you want me? I try to do that if I can. Yep. And that's as much as you can do, because somebody's going to be pissed about all of it. But if you, like you said, a few things you don't do, like don't anchor in a river. When you set anchor to do anything, you're out of the game. It's not bad etiquette for someone to pass you if you drop your ass in an anchor. When you put that anchor down, you are out of the game, and it's pastime.
Yep.
And don't get pissed off because somebody went past you. Now you're the guy behind this boat who's not on anchor, and you just want to get in front of them. Again, it's not look in the mirror. You're the asshole.
Yes.
You don't get to pass. The one river that I see that as an exception, and nobody gets mad, is the South Fork of the Snake. I was fishing down there 15, 20 years ago with Larry and kind of guys we knew, but we're fishing along and all of a sudden this guy just kind of speeds up, passes and drops in right in front of us. Whew. Boy, I'm like, that's a buddy of ours. It's going to be ugly kicking his ass. But I mean, you just don't do that. You don't, this isn't, passing is not, now if somebody's really excessively back rowing and they're fishing really slow and you're fishing streamers and you're not, I have no problem saying, you know, going, but I don't drop in front of them. I'll fish the other side of the river. I'll get a quarter mile down river before I set up on my line. And I just say, well, they're fishing dry flies or they're fishing nymphs and they're fishing slow and we're going faster. But even so, I really sit there and look at it and go, I don't know, maybe we should just, I have no problem saying, you know what? What if we just, we've done it 100 times. Pull over and we're just going to drop anchor.
Yep.
We'll let them get ahead of us. Let's let them go. But there's no such thing as a legal pass to drop back in front. If you're going to pass somebody, take the other bank. I don't care how good it is or isn't. You don't have, it's just like low hole in somebody foot traffic. You don't get that, right? You don't get to do it. Don't block the, and in reality, if you drop anchor to change flies, you're a hack job. You go to the bank to do that. I don't really care where you are. You should just take, you're in the penalty box for a reason. Get to the bank and change your shit out. Don't drop your wanky out and start pissing off the front of the boat and there's people around just because you don't want to lose your space. I mean, see that all the time. It's like, it's not that important.
And so, fishing.
Huh?
It's just fishing.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's just like I kind of go back to when I started this. To me, it seems like, it's kind of like when you watch a commercial for a drug and it gives you 1,500 things wrong with the son of a bitch.
Yeah.
In the end of it, and it says, some lawyer's out there living in his yacht because somebody sued somebody for this shit. And if you're allergic to it, don't take it. No shit, dumbass. Oh, damn, I got hives and almost died. Give me two more, right? If you're that stupid, that's kind of this. Like, if you're this stupid, you're an asshole,
yeah.
Period. And you need your ass kicked. Somebody should pull you out of your boat and do it for you. Make a better personality. But you don't have to do, you know, I mean, sometimes people are just flat out green and in particular on a river like this, they take off and all of a sudden it's like, holy shit. I mean, you get on this river because it's fast and a lot of rocks 4 inches under the water that just love to crash you.
Yep.
And they get down there and it's a little more than they bargained for. And they make mistakes. Well, you know what? Again, you probably did too. Look at the I've told a lot of people. I pulled up behind a guy, I don't know, 10 years ago. Brand new boat, brand new Clack. And I worked for Clack and I designed his boat. And I pulled up behind him and I watched him. He was flailing, man. Had the, you know, donuts out to here. His arms are like this far apart. And everything he could possibly do wrong, he did wrong. I pulled up behind him. I says, you like that boat? He goes, yeah, it's great. I love it. And I said, yeah, it's my boat. Appreciate it. You know, it's one I pod. I said, where are you from? And he was from, I don't remember if he was from down in Henry's Fork or somewhere. I said, so it's a little dicey up here, isn't it? And he says, holy shit, right? Yeah. And I said, you need to rearrange his oars, got him in. I says, lots of little strokes, man. You can't wait till you get close. And sat there and told him because he ran over me. He ran, and every time he's coming at you, and it's like, whoa, I can see him coming. It's like, you really should know a little bit more. but I pulled him aside and I just said, you know, you're not making any friends here.
No.
You really, and he would get close and things were going crazy. He'd drop anchor. That's how you sink boats, by the
way. That's how you,
You want to sink a boat, drop your anchor, get 20 feet of line out and that thing catches. You'll stand that boat up. In this river, it doesn't stand all the way up because it hits bottom, but it fills your boat up and it sits right back down. Your ankle will catch, you'll bounce back, you'll go like this, water will, and you all do this too, water will start coming back of your boat, and your boat will go right to the bottom. Enough water in it, it'll pull loose of your anchor, and you're thinking, watching your ship float.
So that's another mistake I made. I dropped anchor in big water. And luckily, I have a self-bailing raft.
Yeah, it'll still pull your boat out.
Turns out the hour I spent on the phone with Rich from Watermaster was the greatest time investment of my life.
Yeah.
Saved me from
sinking the raft. Well, that's what this guy was doing was, because you can tear your raft, you can pull your frames off, you can do all kinds of shit. But I says, you know, that drop in anchor in fear is really bad. Yeah. I gave him a really quick, you know, lots of little strokes. Just keep, don't worry 10% about
10% adjustments.
Yeah, right? Just a little tiny. And man, it was like the guy was really thankful. And I said, if you see someone, back off. Don't wait until, because he did that to us. He's coming at us. And, and we're going, you know, I'm rowing. Obviously, must not. I don't remember who I was with. And the boat's coming at me. And I'm like, holy shit. So I start bailing out. Like, this guy's going to get me. I've been watching him, right? Yeah. And he dropped anchor. And I'm like, don't do that, man. And that's why I pulled over and talked to him. It was, you know, nothing, but that's usually you can tell. It's the guys who'll come in, you watch it a lot, they'll slide really close to you on purpose.
Yeah.
I had a guy do it to me filming once. And I'm like, yeah, thanks. What a dick. And so, but I, you know, at some point, you just, again, you shouldn't have to be told not to take medicine that you're allergic to.
Yes.
Because you probably know it already, right? And you shouldn't have to. It's just common courtesy. And I don't think you can fix it. I don't really. All this, if you just act like you'd wish somebody else would, you'll be just fine.
It's a golden rule.
And I don't believe that. I don't, any of this. There's somebody out there saying, yeah, I wish I didn't think about that. So, but as a rule of thumb, if you see somebody and you can see them casting, don't go, try to avoid where they're casting.
Yeah, just give.
If you see somebody in a boat, don't pass them. Back off. Take your time. Do things that you would think are just common courtesy, because when you get in a river like this, you get a lot of guides in a river, and there's a lot of places where there's a point, you may be the 10th one that did it to somebody. Sooner or later, people tend to get in your boat with you.
Yeah.
And
that's not a friendly conversation.
No, they aren't. That's not how they're supposed to be, because there's a reason. I mean, if it's total, and a simple apology can go a long way. I've done it. Oh, another one that I missed. If you are on anchor, you pull anchor, you went over to the shore, you're a good guy, you went over to the shore, and you went over and you re-rigged, and then you pulled anchor and didn't look upstream.
Bad. We've all done it.
Yeah, I've done it. I did it twice last year to the same guy. And he came around. The first one was totally just, there was nobody out. I think you were in the boat. Yeah. I think it was when we were filming. It
might have been me rowing.
And no, it was me. It was pure me. And I pulled, there's nobody on the river. I didn't even think of looking.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? There's a landing and you don't get to keep it for you.
Right.
Somebody put in behind me and I pulled out, and man, I couldn't have felt worse. I pulled over. I gave that guy 30 minutes, I'll bet you. I gave him the river. I said, and he went by and I said, I am such a piece of shit. I am so sorry. I'd never even looked. And then I think it was going down to, I think we were doing Towns Run. And then I did it again. This was on a pinch on a corner, comes around. I anchored up back really tight to the pipe run. And then I got in and I looked up the river, but the river channels there. This guy had come on the inside. And this time I didn't really get out too far. I mean, I don't even know if I got on the oars. And I heard the boat and I turned around. I'm like, no, it's the same guy. I almost did it again. But I hadn't moved yet. So I just dropped my anchor
just
back. And I almost did it again. Sorry. I just kicked my ass at the landing. I deserve it. But that's one that you don't do.
That's called pulling anchor.
Yeah, you don't pull anchor on people. You look upstream.
It's like depending merging on into traffic.
Yeah,
right?
Depending on the speed of the river, you got to ask yourself how far. You know, I look upstream 50 yards. If there's a lot of boats, if I'm not going to crowd, if he's going to catch me, if I feel like in any way they just on normal fishing they're going to catch me, I just drop anchor and go over. Johnny will wait. It's embarrassing sometimes how long he'll wait. As Johnny, he's a quarter mile upstream.
Yeah.
I know, but he looks like he's going to run this run. I'm like, that's pushing it, right?
Yeah, it's a good
there's a little bit.
You know,
but Johnny being our head guide and been here 20 years, you've never heard anybody say something bad about Johnny, ever. Quite the contrary.
Or that he fishes slightly too hard.
Yeah. But he shares everything with everybody. He does. And it's like, and then you've got guides. Hell, we had one right here one day. Guys, won't mention the names, but we're all sitting having beer, and one of our buddies said, he didn't know this guy, but knows his boat. If you got a bright yellow or bright purple or bright something boat and you're an asshole, people are taking notes. If you've got another gray clacker craft, you might get away with a little bit.
Yeah, once or twice.
But then, your boat is like, it's that.
Especially if you wear a straw hat or something.
Or if you have one of my buddies, Matt's got a Steelers boat. He's not an ass. He's never done this, or nor would he, because he's.
But it's recognizable.
If you've got your name on your boat, like I do.
Johnny texted me last year going, hey, did you let anybody borrow your boat? I'm like, no, it's sitting in the lot at the slide.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, somebody has the same boat and they're being an asshole on the river today.
There's only two blue boats that Johnny's, that color blue.
Yep.
I forget who's the other one. It's a guy in Ennis.
Yeah, I always wave at him thinking
this. Yeah, I do too. Yeah. And he's another big guy like Johnny.
Yeah.
And I, it's like, that's a good reason to, but anyway, that's what happened. Well, this guy pulls in and he says, you know, we're all friends here, right? We're all drinking beer. And he goes, yeah. He goes, so why do you cut me off all the time? He's right in his grill. It is right there how it should be.
So I think along with that, you know, it goes hand in hand with reading body language. I remember anchoring up in the fish one time. I think it was on my very first float. Two guides came by me and gave me the stink eye. And the first one, I'm like, that guy's an asshole. The second one went, oh, I'm the asshole.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you see that, don't immediately think the other person's the asshole. It might be you. It's always good to be, you know, cautious about what you're doing and reevaluate.
I heard a saying once that said, if you meet an asshole at 8 and you meet another asshole at noon and you meet a third one at 5, you should look in the mirror.
Yes. It's like the guy who only dates crazy women.
Yeah. What about the girl that only dates crazy guys?
Same thing. It's the same thing, right? Yeah. It might be you.
I mean, this whole etiquette thing, I don't know. It bugs me to live in this generation. It didn't. This shit didn't happen in the old days. Things got taken care of quickly, and people were just more. There's just, again, it's too many rats in the cage, and people, they're just so amped up to get to that next fish, right? It's a busy place. I think the two most important ones, period, end of discussion, from boat to walk angler, is three. One, don't crowd them if you don't. That'd be for the walk angler. But from a boat perspective, not dropping anchor close to people or pulling anchor in front of another boat. Because it's kind of two, because one's boat and boat, and the other one's boat and weight angling. Weight angling, just be courteous. It's not that hard. If you, like I said in the beginning, if you spend enough money to buy a boat, you got enough shit in that. You got 15, 20 grand wrapped up in this thing and probably got a Yeti under your ass too. So you probably got a lot of money hanging out there and you fished enough that you shouldn't have to wonder. Uh-huh. So when you do it, you might be that look in that mirror thing and you know what? You don't make any friends no matter what. And the word travels very quickly. Because everybody goes to the same watering hole at the end of the day. Uh-huh. And everybody talks about that son of a bitch with that blue boat. It's Johnny.
It's always Johnny. No, Johnny is actually the only boat I've ever had. I throw spay rods a lot, right? And in some of these channels where it is skinnier, mm-hmm. I try to just, you know, let it hang down, let a boat pass me. I always hope they go fish the other side because a lot of time there's fish there too. Mm-hmm. Johnny's the only boat I've ever had go behind me. And I remember seeing him come down and I'm like, where the hell is he going? He went through about that much water on my bank side just to leave the run, you know, pure for me and push on down.
And that's another one. Don't be nice and go out and then jump right back out into the run.
Yes.
Johnny probably gave you 100 or more yards.
Johnny pushed all the way through.
Yeah. And I've done that on some of those small channels below Varney where I get in it and this person, it's an effort to get back there.
Yep.
And they might have a boat. They might be on foot. I don't know. And it's like, well, shit, I may give them that run. I'm just, there's a lot of water, right? I just go down and get back in the main river.
In some of my not so fine moments, when a boat really buzzes me and is fishing at me from 20 feet away.
If you're in a boat, you don't ever get to throw towards the angle.
Fish away. So when I remember there's these three dudes in a fly craft, which, sorry, Kahana, but when you see a fly craft, you know something's going to happen. Some poor etiquette, but these three dudes, they came down, two of them they're throwing right at me in pipe hole. I'm on the left. Mm-hmm. They're running probably a third of the way off the left bank. So really close to me. That's a great run. There's fish everywhere in there. And they throw right at me. So I bombed a spay cast over their head and tried to give them a trophy to take home with them. I missed because I'm not that good. But that was a couple of years ago.
You just don't. I mean, I don't. Sometimes in growing up in Michigan with tons of boats, you know, because the rivers were small. And you just, the things you see, I don't think we could talk about this for 2 hours. You still, the guy who does that's an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, there's plenty of them. So just keep fishing.
Be nice. All right. I think that's a great place to wrap up episode 18 of the Slide In podcast. Once again, Kelly Gallup, Braden Anderson, slidein.com.
Slidein.com.
Go buy things. We have a lot of things that helps us keep doing these fun things, hopefully.
And these questions
are great.
They do keep me, we are trying to get, sooner or later we're going to have other people on here than the two of us here, but we got to get, there's nobody here right now. Yeah. So people keep saying, can you get somebody on, you know, get this or that. Well, desolate out here.
Yeah.
Not now that he's got a baby.
And
soon we'll have other people around. I talked to O'Keefe about him coming up and that'll be fun, but soon we'll be shooting shows, so we'll have other people. But to the questions, I really dig them. I didn't used to read this stuff ever because, you know, I don't know how many. What's a good number of comments? 200, 100, 3, 4, whatever?
If it's really spicy,
a couple hundred. 60, and I would lock in on the three assholes. And so I just quit reading. I'm like, I don't want to listen to these idiots. Now I kind of find them humorous, so I read them more often, and it's, and Braden takes most of them with the notes, but when I see some, like the guy who wrote in about the white, I like to try to readdress that if I miss something, and on my rants, it's easy for me to miss it, so. But again, thanks, I hope you like it. Thanks for watching.